Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, here we go on a loaded Thursday. This is The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. We are live in Los Angeles, beautiful Los Angeles, on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. 1 hour from now, our NFL meat sandwich, Greg Cosell. Those segments get better and better and better every week. We've got all these young quarterbacks out there. What does the film say with Greg Cosell? I can't wait. Tonight, we've got the Philadelphia Eagles, a desperate team seemingly at Green Bay. I like Philadelphia to upset the Packers tonight. I'll get into that. Joy Taylor is joining me. Joy, how are you?
I'm great. Very excited for tonight's
game. Yeah, tonight's a great game. Tonight would be the best game if it was played on Sunday. So you've got the 3-0 Packers who have kind of struggled and stammered offensively, but very good defensively against a Philadelphia team that's had injuries at left tackle, injuries at wide receiver, defensive back issues. They're healthier now. Left tackle back, wide receiver Alshon Jeffrey back. I like Philadelphia. If I was betting it, not in my blazing five, but I'd take Philadelphia +4 tonight. But it's interesting. Green Bay is a team in transition. And, of course, New England last year was a team in transition. And about 2 years ago, New Orleans became a team in transition. But Green Bay is different than those two teams. New England became last year a power running team. Why? Tom Brady's 42. They now draft a running back every year. They're much more reliant on the running back. They have the deepest set of running backs in the league than Tom Brady. And Drew Brees, a couple of years ago, New Orleans stepped up. They started drafting running backs, paying their offensive line alike, but with Brees and with Brady, there is a reason. They're old. Aaron Rodgers is not. He's 35. He's a young 35. He's always kept himself in great shape. He eats well, smart guy. He's got, most believe, he's still in his prime. I think he's slightly out of it, but I think he's got at least 3 to 4 tremendous years left. But Green Bay made a decision 2 years ago. We want to be less beholden to Aaron Rodgers. Because the downside to being beholden to Aaron Rodgers was he wasn't getting along with Mike McCarthy. He'd had teammates take shots at him. He could be condescending and difficult. And despite what Aaron and Green Bay people deny, the articles came out. They said, this time when we hire Matt LaFleur, you don't be the problem. They, of course, denied. I still believe the article. So if you watch Green Bay tonight, much like New England a year ago and New Orleans 2 or 3 years ago, they were teams in transition. And it's very interesting because Rodgers is not old. Rodgers is really, at least the worst case scenario, just at the end, just at the beginning of his twilight. 4 good years left. But have you noticed? Last year, Green Bay was last in the NFL, rushing 32% of the time. This year, they're rushing 44% of the time. Top 10 in the league. They ramped up their defense. Now, Green Bay was smart. They knew they were going to have to pay Aaron Rodgers, and they knew there wasn't a better college quarterback than Aaron Rodgers, and they knew they were going to have to pay him. But this time, when they rebuild the football team, we're not going to be as Aaron dependent because we've done that for 10 years. And we got a coach that's fired, a quarterback coach that's leaving. We've had one good playoff run and, frankly, a lot of bad press, and we're tired of it. So teams are in transition all the time. Tennessee is going to be in transition in the offseason. They don't like their quarterback. The Saints and New England, great franchises, have been in transition with Brady and Brees the last 2 years because they're getting old. Green Bay's in transition because sometimes Aaron's leadership can be condescending. He ad-libs out of plays and often gets hurt. And when he does get hurt, we come crashing down because we're totally beholden to him. And what's interesting tonight, they face Philadelphia. And that's what Carson Wentz is close to. The two knocks on Aaron Rodgers, he ad-libs out of plays and gets hurt. And his leadership, not always ideal. The two knocks on Carson Wentz, he ad-libs out of plays and gets hurt, and his leadership, players like Nick Foles way, way better. So you're watching a reality for Aaron and what could be another reality for Carson Wentz if he gets hurt again or they don't turn it around. All the time, organizations and companies transition into employees, out of cultures, into employees, out of employees. And I think you're watching a Packer team that knew they were going to have to pay Aaron and should have paid Aaron. And I'm all for paying Aaron. But that 10-year run with Aaron was fraught with coaches fired, feelings hurt, overly dependent, and they decided we're going to be a running team. We're going to play real defense. And by the way, you're watching it. 37 possessions for the Packers this year, only 7 touchdowns. 2 of them last week were a 5-yard drive and a 32-yard drive because Denver turned it over. They are transitioning out of depending on Aaron being great. Kansas City now is all in on Mahomes. They like him as a kid. They like his age. There's no injuries. They like his leadership. We're not going to spend defense. We're going all offense. But you can, and so Kansas City is very comfortable. Keys to the kingdom. You get them. Deshaun Watson right now. It looks like to me, outside of the left tackle, they're very comfortable with everything with Deshaun. They're gonna keys to the kingdom. Andrew Luck. Keys to the kingdom. Seattle, Russell Wilson, pay you. But with Aaron, it's very interesting. Watch the Packers tonight. They are now, that doesn't mean Aaron won't be great. They are built now to be not as reliant on Aaron. And I think Carson Wentz, one more injury or a 500 season, not in the playoffs, they'll have discussions about moving off, being as beholden. Got to pay him. He's too good not to pay. He's a quarterback. We're not going to be beholden to him. All right, so I'm in a rare position this morning defending Baker Mayfield. Biggest game so far in the season for the Browns, although you could say Tennessee and the Rams, Jets were all important. This week, Rex Ryan used to coach in the NFL, defensive guy, very, very good defensive coach, not a great head coach, but a very smart defensive guy who looks at a lot of film, took a shot at Baker Mayfield. He said, quote, he's overrated as hell. Here's a guy right now that's a one-read guy, Baker, and he's going to improvise. He's got to realize he's one of the slowest guys on the field when you take off with it. The ball's not coming out in rhythm. He's staring down guys. He's not accurate down the field. I think that's overly harsh. He has had accuracy issues. I do not blame those all on Baker. In fact, I think a big portion of those are interior offensive line. They have bad tackles. I don't trust Freddie Kitchens. Baker, of course, responded because Baker is, despite what you think, he's insecure. Insecure guys get very defensive. Baker gets very defensive to criticism, and he took a shot. Of course, he did it, Rex Ryan.
In the wise words of Freddie Kitchens, if you don't wear orange and brown, you don't matter. And Rex Ryan doesn't have any colors right now for a reason, so it's okay.
Got to win the moment. I want to give you a couple of numbers. 10 of the 16 interceptions last year for Big Ben were targeting AB. Dak Prescott got better when Dez left. Ocho Cinco left the Bengals. They won more games. 3 teams got better when T.O. left. High-maintenance wide receivers, and I think that's realistic calling OBJ high-maintenance, are difficult. And they're especially difficult for young quarterbacks. This is why the Cowboys got Dez out of town. And did you notice when they went and got a receiver? It was the workaholic, the highly respected, the very mature Amari Cooper. That was not a coincidence. Young quarterbacks, it should be noted, who did the Rams get? Jared Goff. Small college Cooper Kupp, the very dependable, low-key Robert Woods, Brandon Cooks, heavy charity, very quiet. Have you noticed this? Needy wide receivers can be very difficult. They are especially difficult for young quarterbacks who are trying to learn the offense, who are trying to win the room, who are trying to balance the egos. So it's hard enough for Sam Darnold and Baker and Lamar and Kyler Murray to learn the offense. Go into a new sport. I mean, college football to pro is a new sport. Win the locker room. Get the support of your coaches. And here comes OBJ, which I said could be very problematic and won't last. So Jordan Palmer talked about an interception Baker threw against Tennessee. And OBJ didn't do what he was supposed to on the route.
It's supposed to be an 18-yard dig, call it, right? It's supposed to be an 18-yard dig. And because the receiver's so used to killing the DB or beating the guy covering him, which in zone coverage, you don't need to do that. Get to the spot. He does an extra move, and the timing's off, and Baker throws it to a spot, and the receiver's not ready. The pick goes on Baker's stat column, but the reality is it's you, if you can't trust that guys are going to be in the same spot every single time, then you got to wait to see it. You're 6 foot, whatever he is, 6'1", 6'2", The offensive line, as you pointed out, is the weakness. Now you're going to do what you have to do to survive. And for him in college, that was moving to his right.
So it's very easy to bang on Baker, but there's a reason the Rams acquired the receivers they did for Goff, and the Cowboys got Dez out of town and went and got one of the more mature receivers in the league, Amari Cooper. It is hard enough to ask Baker, learn the offense, third coordinator, third coach. He's now having to massage and take care of OBJ because he knows OBJ is sensitive to criticism. He's taking shots at me. And the other thing Baker's being asked to do, in a weird way, David Njoku, the tight end getting hurt, actually strangely could help Baker's growth. That's one less mouth to feed. Because if you look at the stats so far with the passer rating, Jarvis Landry, when Baker throws to Jarvis, his passer rating is 31. So Baker's having to balance the needs of OBJ, learn the system, new head coach. I got to keep Jarvis Landry healthy. What about the catches? Rex Ryan's taking shots at me. It'd be very easy for me to take shots on Baker Mayfield and yell, I was right. But I think Rex Ryan's too harsh. I think OBJ was a very dicey proposition by the GM, John Dorsey. And this is a very combustible situation. Now, if Cleveland wins this weekend, it's all good. But you got Baker trying to make sure OBJ is happy. And now Jarvis Landry and Baker aren't working. You've got a coach who was hired by the GM who just got fired in Kansas City, John Dorsey. And if Freddie Kitchens doesn't work, then John Dorsey gets fired and he's not getting another GM job. Did anybody see Jimmy Haslam, the owner, in the box Sunday night? Did everybody see how intense he was? Dude, you're a billionaire. You always see Jerry smiling and Robert Kraft smiling and Haslam sitting there like hovering over all of it, becoming a national joke because he keeps firing people. So you've got all this chaos and all this pressure and all this needs and you're putting it all on Baker Mayfield? You got to be kidding me. You've got to be kidding me. That's why I would not have hired Freddie Kitchens. I would have hired, as Joy said yesterday, Mike McCarthy. That is why I would not have gone after OBJ, although I think statistically he'll be good this year. I would have gone out and got kind of an Amari Cooper type player. So we can all bang on Baker on this. I could take out the anvil today, but you cannot ask a kid in his 12th, 15th NFL game to juggle this many emotional footballs. It'd be asking me at 24 years old to be the face of a sports network with a bad boss. Joy would be just crazy old yell screaming at me diva. I got Goulet who rarely shows up to work. Well, that's reality. The whole thing would not work is what I'm saying here. Well, you're putting way too much on Baker's plate. This would be hard for Breeze. Way too much on Baker's plate. And this may be the last time I'm very pro-Baker, but I did think Rex is too hard, and I think people are losing a perspective on how hard quarterbacking in this league is. Freaking hard. It is hard if you have Belichick. It's impossible with that mess right now in Cleveland.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
I'm a big believer today. There's so many choices for America. There's movies at the theater. There's movies on subscription TV, Hulu, Amazon Prime. There's cable TV. There's normal TV. There's more malls than ever, indoor, outdoor. There's just options for your dollar. That's why we work so hard on this show. We're just hoping to get you for 12 minutes a day because there's a million channels, right? There's XM Sirius. There's radio stations. My stuff's on podcast. It's on Facebook. It's on YouTube. There's a million ways to get me, a million options for entertainment. So I think as a sport, you have to create urgency. People complain about baseball, the length of games. Oh, hooey. Who gives a rip? A good game's a good game. Baseball's problem. There's 162 games. I don't give a rip if a baseball game in the World Series goes 4 hours. If it's good, it's good. Who cares how long a game is? Football games go 4.5 hours. I care that there's no urgency. So the NFL has urgency. That even a clown show win Sunday solves everything. So the NFL's considering going to 18 games. Join, I don't like it for the exact same reason. It eliminates slightly urgency. I'll give you a great example. This morning in the NFL, here's the takeaway. Baltimore is humming. They're doing everything right in Baltimore. Should have beaten Kansas City. That organization knows what they're doing in Baltimore. This morning, we're also saying Cleveland's pathetic. They can't do anything right. Hey, that is that's like 75 people in an old phone booth. What a Cleveland beats Baltimore Sunday. Cleveland's in first place. That's what baseball doesn't have. That's what the NBA doesn't have. That's what the NFL has. The clown show beats Baltimore, and the clown show's in first place, right? And Baltimore, this well-oiled machine, we're tied, and they just beat us head-to-head. And by the way, on Monday Night Football, Cincinnati plays the Steelers. So one of them's going to be 0-4, my guess Cincinnati. So now Cleveland only has to battle Baltimore, who they just beat, and Pittsburgh with Mason Rudolph. Win Sunday. Great example, Philadelphia. So you think to yourself, well, Colin, that's because the AFC is weak. Well, it is weaker. But let's go to the NFC. So Philadelphia is 1-2, and they've already lost to Atlanta and Detroit. Meaning if right now, Atlanta and Detroit would get a tiebreaker over Philadelphia in a wild card. And if they lose to Green Bay tonight, that's the third potential playoff team in the NFC that they would lose if tied a tiebreaker. They'd have to have a better record to get in. But yet if Philadelphia wins tonight, they're 2-2. They get extra rest to go home and play, the New York Jets. They'll probably be 3-2. And oh, by the way, Alshon Jeffrey's back. The left tackle's back. DeSean Jackson's coming back. The Cowboys' schedule gets harder. Philadelphia's gets easier. Win Sunday, or in this case, win Thursday. This is what sports are losing their you-know-what on the time of games. Create urgency. NBA, first-round playoff series, 3 games. The ratings will go up. The Warriors, what? James Harden and Westbrook lost the opening game to Denver? Oh, my God. Now it doesn't matter. The Golden State, LeBron, win a game, lose a game. That's why I said with the NBA, you want your ratings to go up. First round, 3 games. Second round, 3 to 5 games. Conference finals, you can do 5 to 7. Finals, 7. That's why we have, that's why I don't like conference championships in college football. You can be, mess all over yourself, but if you win this game, get to the championship. We keep adding games, and what we're really doing is eliminating urgency. Take the Browns and the Ravens. Cleveland wins Sunday. We're all like, whoo, always love Baker. I told you, Freddie Kitchens, mayor of Cleveland. And Baltimore's reeling. You can't beat Cleveland at home. Moe Lamar's got a real ceiling on this. 18 games in the NFL? Don't rob us of that urgency.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
I saw some advanced stats. These came from Greg Cosell. This is interesting. So having a clean pocket, meaning a quarterback goes back to pass and there's nobody around him, obviously beneficial, right? So these are the quarterbacks in the NFL that have had the most time to throw. According to advanced stats, Greg Cosell, Dak, Brady, Garoppolo, Carr, Brissett, Mahomes. Outside of Derek Carr, they're winning a bunch of games. But it's the bottom of the list that's interesting. The highest pressures, meaning bad offensive lines, Deshaun, Watson, Josh Allen, and Baker. What's interesting here is Deshaun Watson's 2-1, could be 3-0. Josh Allen is 3-0. Kirk Cousins is... Why is Baker man overboard with pressure? Because you keep telling me what a great athlete he is. And so I was thinking this morning, so he's 5'11 and a half, ran a 4.85 40. I ran a 4.79 in high school. Of all these great quarterbacks in the NFL that are young, tell me which one Baker Mayfield's a better athlete than. Is he a better athlete than Kyler Murray, Lamar Jackson, Deshaun Watson, Carson Wentz, Patrick Mahomes? Don't say Mitch Trubisky, because Trubisky ran a much faster 40 time and was also just a better athlete coming out of college. The athlete, you keep telling me how great Baker is, but yet when his offensive line deteriorates, his numbers plummet. Deshaun's don't. Josh's don't. Kirk Cousins don't. We don't think Mariota's any good, so you can't use him as a comp, right? He's done. My point is, who is the young quarterback in the league that you keep calling a statue? You tell me he's not an athlete. Every time I tell you he's good, you tell me he doesn't work. It's Jared Goff. Jared Goff is the only young quarterback in the NFL that ran a 40 time as slow as Baker Mayfield, and Goff's 6'3 and a half. Baker's 5'11 and a half. And oh, by the way, Goff's 40 time, the statue, was faster than Baker's. So stop with the he's a great athlete. Now, I do think he has quick feet, and that's important. I don't think you have to be a burner. But whenever I hear this whole thing about Baker, it's like, oh, he's fast. And my takeaway is, well, tell, is he a better athlete than Deshaun and Josh? Is he a better athlete than Wentz? Is he a better athlete than the recently retired Andrew Luck? Is he better than Patrick Mahomes? Is he better than Kyler? I don't think he's better than any of those guys. His 40 time and his cone drills and his verticals line right up with Jared Goff, who you keep telling me is a statue. So either Goff's a better athlete than you think, or Baker Mayfield's not as great an athlete as you keep telling me. I keep telling you, when Baker rolls out to the right, you ever notice he rolls right and back? Because he can't beat the defensive end of the corner. Because he runs a 4.8 40. I'm not saying he's completely unathletic. He's got quick feet. Excuse me. But I think sometimes we're Jared Goff's dad played Major League Baseball. Is it possible Goff's a little better athlete, you think? A little? By the way, Oklahoma, where Baker Mayfield played, had four offensive linemen drafted in the NFL this year. Is it possible Baker had a little help at Oklahoma? Four offensive linemen this year drafted in the NFL. NFL wide receivers. Brilliant head coach. So, you know, I'm not just banging on Baker to bang on him, but God, if I have to hear again, he's really quite athletic and Goff's a statue. If your dad's a Major League Baseball player, you got some good DNA. How many of you out there watching had a dad who played in the bigs? I think Goff's a little better athlete than you keep telling me, and I don't think Baker's quite the athlete you keep telling me, and all the comps tell me. All my cone drills and 40s and verticals, they're the same guy. All right, Greg Cosell, 40 years NFL Films. My rant is over. Let's get serious now. 40 years of NFL Films. This guy knows his stuff. Let's start with the New York Giants. You know, circumstances matter a lot for quarterbacks in this league. A coach, your O-line. I watched Daniel Jones. I watched almost that entire game, Greg. It was fun. What did you see that you liked? I mean, he had that nice scramble to the corner of the end zone. He races over there and beats a DB. I liked what I saw. What did the film say?
Well, I think, you know, I always start with how he looks in the passing game. He looked poised in the pocket. He was decisive. And I think that's always something you look for with a young quarterback. Does the ball come out? And does it, for the most part, go to the right place? He knew where to go with the ball. He delivered with timing. And for the most part, he threw accurately. What I like the most, Colin, and this is what we don't talk about very much anymore, because all we do is focus on guys who can run around, is I loved his pocket movement, the ability to slightly slide one way or the other, to move away from pressure, keeping his focus down the field to still make throws within the structure of the play. I think that, unfortunately, has become an overlooked element of quarterback play because we focus on the Lamar Jacksons and the guys who can just run out of the pocket. But I think that's such an essential attribute to play at a high level in the NFL.
All right, Shanahan and Jimmy G are 3-0. It's a very clever offense. It was mistake-prone last week. But, you know, we both had our reservations about Jimmy G. We think he's talented, but he didn't start enough games. I think now he's 9-2. I think we both think Shanahan's very clever. Let's talk about San Francisco. What do you see that you like or don't?
Well, I thought Jimmy G played his best game of the season this past week. Toughness in the pocket, quick, compact delivery, consistent ball placement on intermediate throws. And I think Shanahan does such a good job with how he attacks defense. You see, it's really interesting how Shanahan goes about it, because he builds and structures his offense based on understanding the responsibilities of defensive players. So in, well, let's say he calls ISO lead run action with the fullback, and they play with the fullback over 50% of the snaps this year, he knows how the defense has to respond to that. And then the pass play that comes off that exploits the defenders that have to respond to the run game. He's really good at that. And I think that they throw the ball in the middle of the field as well as any team in the league. And that's because they get those underneath defenders, normally linebackers, they get them in conflict, because those linebackers always have a run responsibility and a pass responsibility. And Shanahan knows how to attack that.
Good stuff. Now let's concentrate a little on the game for a couple of minutes here. Philadelphia is 1-2, but it's deceiving because they've had drops that could have won those games. They could be 3-0. Left tackle's been an issue. Alshon Jeffrey now is back. They lose tonight. They're 1-3 in the NFC. That feels a little problematic. Panic with what you see on film with Philadelphia?
Well, I think they've had some issues that are very problematic that need to get fixed. First of all, their run game has been anemic. They've not done a very good job in the interior with their run game. I would say that losing Deshaun in these last 2 weeks, they've had no vertical dimension whatsoever, and their pass game's been very, very condensed. So that's been a problem. Defensively, I think the structure of their defense has not been able to play out because it's built on a four-man D-line rush, and they've not been able to generate pressure with their four-down linemen, putting major pressure on their corners, and their corners are not up to the test, Sidney Jones and Rasul Douglas, with Darby out now. And that's forced Jim Schwartz to probably, in my view, have to blitz more than he would ultimately like. Okay. So they've got a number of issues that can be corrected, but they're causing issues.
Let's talk about Green Bay. We know the defense is improved, but they're only averaging 5 yards per or 5 plays per series. Now, they have played very good defenses. Let's not overreact. But of their 7 touchdown drives of 37 possessions, 2 last week were short, 5 yards and 32, I think, because Denver had a turnover. Again, I just can't be too tough on Green Bay. I kind of feel like I got to give them 8 weeks. Is there something? They are running the ball more effectively, Greg. Do you like that?
Yeah, and I think that that's where ultimately a Matt LaFleur offense starts because of his history with Shanahan and McVay. It starts with the run game. And 2 weeks ago, Aaron Jones had the big game. This week, his numbers weren't as good, but Jamal Williams' numbers were better. I think the pass game will take some time to come around. But you hit it on the head. Right now, they're a defensive-based football team. And Mike Pettine does such a good job with the way he uses his safeties, with how he structures his secondary, all his multiple front looks. So right now, they're a defensive team. And we'll see what happens tonight. Maybe they get well offensively tonight because the Eagles, as we said, are having some issues on the defensive side of the ball.
I want to talk about the Cowboys and the Saints. I think New Orleans is going to win the game, and I think I've understated. If you didn't watch New Orleans and Seattle, the Saints really laid it to them. They were really physical, and I thought they beat them in a number of ways. The Saints' defense has surprised me. It's better than I thought. And I think it's the first time Dak is going to face a pass rush. Your takeaway, I think this is going to be very interesting for Dak. It's going to be a big leap from the Miamis to the Saints defense.
Well, these teams played week 13 last year, and Dak was sacked 7 times. And even though the Cowboys won the game, I believe it was 13-10, you know, they really struggled to move the ball. The Saints did a good job versus Elliott. They played a ton of man-to-man coverage, and they won the line of scrimmage. I think my sense is this could be another low-scoring game. I think Bridgewater, he was not very good last week, and I think they knew that. They had a very limited drop-back passing game.
Yeah.
The game plan was clearly designed to limit Bridgewater as a passer, and the way the game played out, that tactic was able to prove effective. Now, I think Teddy will probably get a little better with each game. I don't think he's a high-level talent. They probably know that. The issue is going to be Kamara, because last year in the game, the Cowboys did something really fascinating. They decided to go with 6 defensive backs on third down, which they normally didn't do up to week 13 last year, and they matched Jordan Lewis, a corner, man-to-man on Alvin Kamara, and Kamara had 8 catches for 36 yards in the week 13 game a year ago.
Yeah, I think we both like Teddy. 13-6 is his last 19 starts, but I think we both see him as a, there are guys that are tremendous backups, and I think I think Tannehill and him are really made to be great backups. And with that, I want to go to Jacoby Brissett, who you and I have said for years, and my feeling has been, I think he's a franchise quarterback. I don't know how great he is, but I got to tell you, I'm watching Indianapolis with that offensive line. He's getting some time to throw. What do we make of Jacoby so far?
I like Jacoby Brissett. I liked him coming out of NC State. I think you can make the comparison that he's somewhat similar to Dak Prescott. You know, he's a bigger man, but I think stylistically he's somewhat similar. He throws the ball really well. They've speeded him up, which is what I knew they would do with Frank Reich and that staff, because he used to be a little too deliberate. He's got good movement. He certainly has a big arm. They try to keep him in rhythm. They do a really nice job with the rhythmic passing game, so the ball comes out, and they stay with the run game. So, you know, I think that he's a very solid, consistent player, and I think he'll just continue to improve as he plays more. This is really his second year as a starting quarterback.
You know, I text Chris Ballard when Luck retired, and I wished him well, and he said, our season is not over, not for a second.
No. No. This kid's going to be a good player.
Yeah, he's a real player. Now, here's what's interesting. Greg, I follow recruiting. I saw Kyle Allen in high school. It was as good a high school quarterback tape as I'd ever seen.
Oh, he was the number one. You know this. You follow this stuff. He was the number one recruited quarterback coming out, I believe, Scottsdale, right?
And his tape wasn't good. It was spectacular.
Right.
Then he goes to Texas A&M, and Sumlin recruits a million receivers and a million quarterbacks, and it's bumpy, and so he leaves. But I'm watching him Sunday. I'm watching his feet. It's not a one-read offense.
Nope.
Greg Olsen looked like he was 27. And Cam's lost 8 straight starts. Now, let's get away from Cam's injury. Let's just talk Kyle Allen. Again, I'm looking at size, feet, arm strength. Yesterday, Jordan Palmer told me on the show, bright, coachable. Could Carolina, if Cam doesn't get healthy, is this a better team with him this year, Kyle Allen over an injured Cam?
Well, that's hard to know, but I will say this. Now, Allen started the last game of the year last year and looked very good.
Yes.
Started this game this week and looked very good. He's decisive. He's willing to turn it loose. He was precise with his ball placement. He fits a Norv Turner offense. It's one game. So let's just say that's what he did in that game. He's obviously going to get a much tougher test in Houston this week with a somewhat depleted offensive line against a very good defensive front. But he throws the ball well. He knows where to go with it. Look, they were able to exploit the Greg Olsen, DJ Swearinger matchup.
Yep.
Because he made some really precise throws. So we'll see. But, you know, he certainly looks the part. And we know, as you said, because you follow this more than I do, but I did know he was the number one recruit coming out, that the kid's got talent.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, Buffalo made my top 10. I think it's a real defense. I think their coaching staff is excellent. I think they're doing a good job to, how would I put this, put Josh Allen in positions to succeed. I don't think their offensive line yet is a great pass-blocking offensive line. What do you make of Buffalo's 3-0? Because, by the way, I just read this last night. Buffalo's been 3-0 a lot, and they've had great Septembers before. I kind of buy this Buffalo team a little more. You?
Yeah, I think that Allen probably had his worst game of the three this past week. He still has some concerns. He still stays focused on his primary too long. He walks a fine line between that second reaction ability that can be positive and that negative recklessness. He can be overreactive in the pocket. You know, they have a distinct profile, Colin, the way they have to play to win. They can't turn it over. They've got to run the ball with some effectiveness. They're a good defensive team, and then they have to rely on Allen, and this is hard to do, but he can do it, to make special second reaction plays. And he'll make enough good throws from the pocket, but he still has a ways to go, but they've got a distinct profile. That's the way they have to play. I'll be very anxious to see what Bill Belichick does this week, because
yeah.
When you play them, the last thing you want to get beat by, you don't want to walk out of the stadium and go, oh, Josh Allen beat us because he made great second reaction plays.
Right.
That's what you don't want to get beat by.
Yeah, big strong kid, though, that can move. All right.
Oh, he sure can.
Yeah, finally, Deshaun Watson, you know, he has the most, he's the most pressured quarterback in the league. He can be an absolute escape artist. I mean, he made a play last week. And your big play of the week is Deshaun Watson,
yeah.
So let's get to it.
Yeah, pressure's a relative term, though, but we'll talk about that another time. But let's get to the play, and let's start it right now.
Okay.
And this was a touchdown pass that he threw to Jordan Akins, the tight end, the first one, not the one where he ran around. Really well-designed play. It's a 2x2 set, and you can see the two inside receivers, Hopkins and the tight end Akins. They're going to run seam routes. Now, it's a single high safety coverage, okay? It's cover 3. So what you have here is a post safety. He can't play both seams. It's as simple as that. So if you're not going to carry the verticals, then he can't play both. So what does Deshaun do on his drop? He looks left to Hopkins, and Hopkins is clearly the bigger threat. So what does the safety do? He looks that way and turns that way. Then you take Akins down the seam, and it's an easy pitch and catch throw. This is really well designed. You know, like I said, there's the linebacker Thomas Davis. If he's not going to carry the vertical by Akins, there's no way you can play this. And they know that from film study. So this is well designed, well executed, a pitch and catch touchdown. This is the kind of thing you really like to see in the high red zone.
Yeah, boy, I really enjoy watching Deshaun play. And I know he's not the perfect quarterback, but man, as far as TV dollars, I get my money's worth every Sunday with Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, I like watching. I think he has a chance to be really, really good. He's still got to work through some things, and it's a fine line to coach him because you don't want to take away the movement. But on the other hand, he's also responsible for a number of those sacks.
Yeah, no. It's like Andy Reid says, I'm not going to take the special out of my guys. I got to let them be special, but you got to put them in situations to succeed. Greg Cosell, big play of the week, manipulating the Chargers secondary in a road win. Greg, 40 years NFL Films. Great talking to you.
Thanks, Colin. Appreciate it.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Every Thursday at this time, we do our college football bets. I take three games, Fox Bet Marquee three games. I try to do games that I think we can all watch together. In the NFL, I don't care. I just pick the five best games that have the best numbers. In college, I like to pick games we're all going to watch. I'm not going to bet on Northeast Louisiana. And TV games, it makes it a little bit harder, but we do our homework and we like these picks. All our odds are provided by Fox Bet, so it's our marquee three, and here we go.
Ready to make some sweet cash? Colin's going to give you his three sure bets for the college football weekend. It's time for the Fox Bet Marquee 3. Virginia at Notre Dame.
Virginia's getting 12.5 points. That is a lot of points. This is a good Virginia team that is tied for the most sacks in college football. I think the score will come down. You got to remember, Notre Dame played an incredibly physical game last week and a highly emotional game at Georgia. It's the biggest game in Georgia football in a long time. It was so physical, Brian Kelly said, watching it on the sidelines, you could hear that game like no other. I think Notre Dame's banged up. It's a highly emotional game. Virginia was awful last week as they were looking ahead, so they looked like garbage against Old Dominion. Notre Dame tends to be a good team after a loss, but not as dominant. I think Virginia covers. Notre Dame wins. They pull back emotionally. It's 30-20, but I'm going to take Virginia and the points here, their biggest game in a long time.
Northwestern at Wisconsin.
Northwestern's hard to figure out, okay? They are bizarrely good on the road. They're 8-0 in their last eight road conference games. They're also bizarrely good as a double-digit underdog. In the last 18 games, they've been a double-digit underdog. They've won 10 of them straight up. Northwestern, 15-2 in their last 17 conference games, one of the best coach teams. Now, Wisconsin's better, there is no question. And because Wisconsin was on national TV and drubbed Jim Harbaugh, I think they're overvalued. I like them. I think if you slow down Jonathan Taylor, the running back, you slow down the offense. Again, I'm taking a team that got a four-turnover benefit against Michigan, one on national TV, and everybody in the world now has Wisconsin in the playoffs. Wisconsin's going to be down two starters in the secondary. They win the game 36-16, but I'm taking the 24.5 points with Northwestern.
USC at Washington.
I'm going to take the favorite Washington here, favored by 10. I think they win by more than that. USC is clinging to life. They're a mess. Don't overvalue the Utah win. Utah is Utah. Washington is better defensively, better at quarterback, better coach, and an overall better roster. USC's a bad road team, 2-5 since the start of last year. They can't hold on to the football, last in turnovers in the Pac-12, last in turnover differential, so don't take it away. It's a coaching mismatch. Clay Helton, with all that talent, last 16 games, 8-8. Washington doesn't lose at home much with Doug Peterson, 16-1 in their last 17. Washington does one thing well. They are absolutely brilliantly coached on defense. They're number two in the conference, And the other thing is Jacob Eason, if you haven't seen him play for Washington, is going to end up going in the draft. He may go number one or two. Spectacular quarterback mismatch here. Washington wins it. USC is a big play offense. They'll score some points downfield, but I'll take the Huskies to win by more than 10, 34-23. So Virginia is going to lose at Notre Dame, but take the points. Notre Dame pulls back a little off that highly physical, emotional win over Georgia. Northwestern loses to Wisconsin, but I think Wisconsin's a tad overvalued after winning on national TV. I think they pull back a little bit emotionally. And I think USC is not well coached, can't hang on to the football. We're overvaluing them on a home win at the Coliseum over Utah and Washington. By the way, USC lost to BYU. Washington went to Provo and destroyed them. Just a better coach team and a better football program right now. There you go. All odds provided by Fox Bet.